Still, Queer as Folk. Foreskin problems for Gus. Ted gets lucky. At least for a few minutes. Hello again, Matt.
Hello again, Patrick.
Ooh, this episode is called No Briss, No Shirt, No Service.
To the point, isn't it? It first aired on Showtime in the U.S. on December 10th, 2000.
The episode was written by Ron Cohen and Daniel Lippman and directed by Russell Mulcahy.
Michael talks Brian into attending the briss that Lindsay and Melanie are having for his son, Gus, while Justin attempts to make himself noticed at Babylon.
Go, Justin. Team Justin.
So much shiny. And Michael runs into a co-worker on the street near some of the gay bars.
Uh-oh.
Meanwhile, Ted gets lucky with a guy.
Yes.
Finally. who at first rejects his advances.
Who wouldn't, right?
Oh, poor Ted.
This episode was frantic. It is all over the place, and I thought it was incredibly funny. There was so much action packed into this one.
Oh, yeah. This episode, like, does not waste time. Where the first moment is outside Lindsay and Mel's apartment. We have this large gathering for Gus's briss.
Complete with a suitable Fiddler on the Roof sounding background music.
They might as well have started singing Tradition. it was kind of incredible. It was... And very Jewish.
They kind of overplayed the Jewishness of it, which was really our first introduction into knowing that Melanie? Yeah,
Melanie is Jewish.
Yep. And they drove that home.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it came with the music and the sassy aunt and the retired podiatrist uncle.
Gefilte fish.
It was gefilte fish. I mean, it was chock full of... Jew. And of course, this episode started with this narration by Michael. He might as well have said he was talking to God like Tevye. But
I love Michael's voiceovers. Like in the last episode, I was really critical of him reciting Plato, but I'm starting to like these intros where Michael, the nice, approachable character and the kind of the warm, cuddly guy, is introing everything.
Yeah, he's the character that is the one that's easiest for the audience to digest.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, you know, if you want to put a label to it, he's the most quote unquote normal.
Yeah.
You know, he's the one that takes the audience perspective.
Right.
And introduces us to what's going on. And, he even has this moment, like, as all the relatives are saying hello, the relatives and the lesbians that are at this briss are saying hello to him, and he's like, there could be a moment where I could have fallen for a girl.
Yeah.
Seeing them in their beautiful home with their new baby and their arms around each other, I wished for a moment that I too could be a lesbian. But then I remembered I'd have to eat pussy, so I said, forget it.
I am right there with you, Michael.
So I don't remember. Was Michael at the house at that point? Or at some point, he winds up in a steam room fully clothed with Brian.
So we're at Mel and Lindsay's house, and he says, let's go back an hour. And the whole scene rewinds back and goes into the gym, and he's in a full suit next to.
Terrible suit, by the way. Bad costume.
Awful suit. He's also in a suit at the gym. And like, I know he's not there to work out. He's actually there to convince Brian to come to this party.
He just worked out.
But nonetheless, I would have found it very weird if he had shown up at a suit just to talk to Brian.
Yeah.
And somehow he got past the front desk.
Well, once again, gym is social club, which we talked about last time.
I would like to think that there's a dress code still, and Michael did not.
There definitely was in the steam room, as we found out.
Oh, my. Michael follows Brian into the steam room.
I love that.
Full suit. Full suit. Still in a full, like, that's the thing that, like, boggled my mind, because he tries to follow him in the steam room, and is surprised when he loses Brian. He finally finds him, and... It being Brian, he of course has found a hunky guy who is stroking it, who is just grabbing his junk to say, hey, and Brian is of course already stroking it.
That happens in every steam room, in every gym in a gay neighborhood that I've ever been into. And it's almost to comedy the way that there's always signs on these steam rooms like towels must be worn at all times.
And the gyms are on to us.
Yeah. Hugely controversial thing, because anybody that ever questions it is immediately like shunned and said, you just don't understand the steam room. And it's like, well, okay.
Sometimes I want to go into a steam room just to sit in the steam.
Yeah.
Is that so terrible?
Yeah. Like use it for its intended purpose, not necessarily.
To cruise.
Yeah.
But I digress.
What?
And one of my favorite things that Michael says is it's like 150 fucking degrees in here. I'm like, well, Michael, you're wearing a suit in a steam room.
Jesus Christ, it's like 150 fucking degrees in here.
This shouldn't be a surprise.
It definitely looks like a wool suit,
too. Oh, God.
One thing that I noticed is that the guy in the steam room was actually in the credits as Jim Bunny. I love that.
That makes so much sense. Brian shoos him away, tosses the towel in his face that I'm pretty sure Michael probably got a good deep whiff in. let's be honest, he probably did. You know, he says, what do I tell them? And he's like, just tell them the truth. Something came up. And I'm like, well, wink, wink.
Yeah, I think they could have done that better. It's like the whole something suddenly came up line. It's
like, oh, I get it. You're talking about your penis.
Yeah. Ha ha ha. Look how funny we were.
Yes.
And they could have written that better.
Oh, yes. So we then, you know, fast forward back to the Briss. And we see that Emmett has brought a date named Katsu. And it is this Japanese man who apparently does not speak English. This does not bother Emmett. And this is where I really have to call out the show's casual racism in this scene.
Yeah, it did have that kind of breakfast at Tiffany's moment.
Oh, I sat there going like, no, you cannot be saying this. He has no idea what he's saying. All he cares is that he's really cute.
Well, let's break this down. Where did you see the racism in the scene? Was it just the over-the-top affectation of a foreigner? Or was it that he was, as Melanie called him, a goddamn male prostitute?
The male prostitute thing, I did not mind. It was particularly when they decide that they need to take Katsu to a translator, Melanie.
Wait. Why does Melanie all of a sudden speak Japanese?
Okay, all right. Let's go ask Melanie. She's fluent in sushi.
Is it her secret superpower?
Apparently, she speaks a bunch of languages.
She speaks all access powers, according to Todd.
Right.
Well, like, really? What?
Right. Well, and here's the thing that really bugged me was when Ted said that we'll take you to Melanie because she speaks sushi.
Oh,
and
yeah,
I was Ted, you bastard. How dare you? I was so bothered by that. And it's the way that they put this. You know,
yeah, they kind of shoehorned
at this
in a
point, this is the third episode, and it's the first time we ever really see a non-white character.
Yeah,
and I'm
that's
like,
true.
And this is how you're going to use him as a continual punchline?
You know, now that you mention it, at the time, I do remember in 2000 that the show did get an awful lot of criticism for being very white bread. And they fix that a little later on in the show, and the UK version got something similar, and they Channel 4, which was airing it at the time, actually came up with another series called Metrosexuality, which was almost the exact opposite of Queer as Folk, and it was wildly funny. If you ever encounter it, check it out. It's really, really good.
Well, thank you, Patrick, for that recommendation.
You're welcome, Matt.
Thank you.
Glad to help.
Oh, fantastic. Another British television show.
I know.
I need to break something off of from rewatching the British Bake Off again. That'll be my recommendation, is to watch The Great British Bake Off
that's available to you
on Netflix if you have not watched it. I'm a big fan of season 3. Anyway, so They take Katsu to Melanie, and they keep saying the same phrase over and over again, and she pulls Michael aside and says he's saying money. He's expecting Emmett to pay him. We find out that Katsu is apparently a prostitute.
Can there's money. He's saying he expects Emmett to pay him.
For what?
He's a goddamn male prostitute.
So what do we do to let Emmett know this newfound fact? Michael gives his translation into a very elaborate cover-up of what it really means. And I know the phrase cherry blossoms was involved as well. And I'm like, this show is not helping its case anymore. I was just so...
Well, you got all riled up over this episode.
I was very bugged by it.
Did you finish it?
I powered through. And Emmett is just so moved by what Katsu is saying, and Katsu has still no idea. You know what? The other thing that happened is, so Katsu is holding like orange juice, so he must have like a mimosa or something, because remember, gay. And Katsu is like saying juice or something like that. And
oh, right.
And Emmett says juice, pointing out the orange juice, and it said Jews, and points out Melanie's family. And I'm like,
Jews?
No, Jews. Juice.
Yeah, this was like so out of character for Melanie. For what we know of Melanie so far, she should have marched that guy and Emmett right out of the building. But she didn't. She had this, she almost turned into like a comedic moment.
Yeah, she finds it very like hilarious, considering how riled up she gets.
She's got a hair trigger.
Right, exactly. So then Discover are being told basically what the bris is by the rabbi. And after the rabbi gives a very graphic description, right, step by step of what he does, what he is going to do to Gus, Emmett promptly faints.
Loved it.
It was fantastic. It was very slapstick.
Yep.
And just really well timed.
And the podiatrist comes over
He's like, get out of the way. I'm a doctor. And they're like, you're a retired podiatrist. When have you ever dealt with a fainter? And I'm like, did everyone turn into Long Island or something? It was hilarious. And so they go and get horseradish. Oh, no, wait. So they ask, do you have any type of smelling salts?
How about poppers?
How about poppers? What my favorite thing
that
is that
woken Emmett up, by the
no
way.
No one bats an eye at that. Like, yeah. None of the relatives were just like, how
not
about
even
poppers?
An eye roll from Melanie.
Nope, nothing. And so they get the horseradish from the gefilte fish. And that, of course, immediately wakes
Emmett
up.
It's like, okay, we get it. It's a bris.
I was like, right? Wow. Emmett pops right back up.
I love that scene where everybody just kind of goes, and pulls back together. And we left out something. While all this is going on, poor Justin is with Daphne on the diving board of the pool, sharing a cigarette.
Licking his wounds.
Yeah. He wasn't invited to the bris.
No, he was not. After being very roughly rebuffed
handled
by... Brian just really broke this poor little kid's heart. And it's like, well, I mean, he was just a fuck.
Yeah.
But this almost... and so Daphne gives him the idea of like, well, don't worry about it. Go when I lost my boyfriend, I just went out and got another one. And I want to be like, good for you, Daphne. You got off that. You got knocked off the horse and you popped right back up. Good for you. So this sparks something in Justin as well.
Well, there was that part where Justin and Daphne decide that they're going to go out and
yes. Oh God.
In search of Brian. And I love that line where Daphne's like, what if somebody hits on me? And she follows up a little while later with, I like Miss Melissa Etheridge a lot. It's just this line out of nowhere.
Do you think that means anything? Yeah. It's like, well,
no.
Daphne, yes, you're a big old lesbian.
Yeah, like Daphne,
who was about
Daphne,
to go to a little affair. I mean, what do you think? You can like Melissa Etheridge and not be a lesbian.
Yeah.
But it's a great moment. Very much like, okay, Justin now has a plan of action.
Yep.
Which is, he is going to do whatever he has to make Brian jealous. So he's off to make that plan happen.
Meanwhile, Gus still has his foreskin, and Emmett has come too, and so the rabbi is asking him to pick up the pace because he's doing twins.
He's got twins. What was rather jarring was there's Gus naked.
Mm-hmm.
Melanie is holding this rather large baby. I mean, Gus is huge for his age. So I was like, what? I mean, he obviously...
Matt, that's what happens at a breast.
I don't have anything to say to that.
you get to watch the whole thing.
Just sat there going like, what?
Yeah.
And
Brian Evans, kicks in the door.
Right, because Michael called him and said, we just found out what's going on, or we found out what a bris is. You better get here now.
Yeah, well, first of all, they saw the Hebrew writing on the invite, and it suddenly is dawning on them that it's a bris. So I thought that was a little, like, the writing, like, fell apart a little bit there, but
yeah,
the whole scene was just so, like, kind of funny, and it had this racist component to it, and it had...
It was very sitcom-y almost.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, we have, you know, a wacky setup to get Brian to actually come to the party, because, you know, he had no plans and to attend this party, this religious ceremony. Mm-hmm. And he shows up right as the rabbi is, like, pulling out whatever it is that he pulls out to then... do the snip, and calls Melanie and Lindsay into the kitchen. And Melanie,
you too, now.
Yeah, oh my gosh. Mel like throws down the religious card right away. Like, how dare you bust in during a religious ceremony?
I love it when Melanie gets angry. She just goes bam. Like, oh, she's just not 16. Having it.
She is great. Yeah, it's fantastic to watch. I just love that she's the one who's the most unafraid to be the foil to Brian and to call him out on everything. And she doesn't give a shit what Lindsay thinks or what anyone thinks. Like, I'm going to be the one that does not care what he, you know, I don't care who he is. He screwed this up. So they're having this fight, and Brian actually brings up a very interesting point, and it gives us, like, an underlying reason why he feels so strongly about it, is that, like, he's not, that Gus is not even a week old, and you already want to change something that's just a part of him. Mm-hmm. And I think that's actually, like, it gives us another piece of that puzzle that was hinted at in the previous episode, with Brian having such a problem with straight people, and then throwing, you know, he's saying, like, you already want to change something about him that's just a part of him. And right. I'm like, oh, that's kind of deep.
Yeah,
Brian.
I see where he's coming from, but again, with Brian, there's in these first few episodes, there's no indication where a lot of this comes from. It's almost like he's just kind of exploding left and right and popping off at people, and you're left with this notion that you kind of got to figure it out yourself. And
yeah, there's a lot of given circumstances with Brian that we are not given right away.
Right, right. They're trying to define the character. I think in some cases very cryptically, and then in other cases you're getting hit over the head with it. And it's, I think I can give him a pass, the way that they're writing the character this early, just because there's so much going on, and this was kind of a screwball comedy episode. Right. So it kind of worked here, but you're still left with filling in a lot of Brian blanks as we go along.
I believe we cut to that evening.
Mm-hmm.
And we're on Liberty Avenue, and it's Michael and it's Ted walking down the street. And Ted bumps into a very attractive man,
Blake Wiesecki.
And, you know, they have, they bump into each other, and Ted, keeping his head down, just, you know,
he looked like he was, like, about to, he thought he might have been jumped a few minutes later, like, pickpocketed or something like that.
And but as they continue to walk down the street, Blake is not being very coy about it, and is clearly checking Ted out.
Grabbed his junk looking at Ted.
And this is, I think, where the seed of me really connecting with and really caring for Ted started to happen, because hearing him feel, it's not even him being self-deprecating, he just, like, has a low opinion of himself, because Michael is saying, no, this guy is very clearly checking you out, he is very clearly interested.
Mm-hmm.
and Ted is like, no, he would, there's no way that a guy who looks like that, who is named Blake, would ever be interested in a guy like me, who looks like me, whose name is Ted. Like, he is just cutting himself down so deeply.
Have you thought about why Blake has this, like, attraction to the schlub Ted? It it kind of didn't make sense, but well, at like, the same time, there's most of the time when you look at two people coming together, you're like, what do they see in each other?
Oh,
this
yeah.
movie is like that.
A lot of times you look at couples and you're like, you're a 10 and you're a 3. Where is the 7 coming from? You know? And
it was just like Blake just sort of like popped up out of nowhere for no apparent reason.
Right.
Very quickly. And then bam, right on Ted.
Right. And the way Ted talks about himself and the way he's been described in the first two episodes.
Yeah,
it did sell to me that there is something a little more sinister to Blake and why he wanted him. So
we love those edgy guys.
Oh yeah,
easy boy.
Right, and Blake was just so cute. And
he's bad news. Stay away from him.
And so we think, okay, Ted has shrugged it off. Likely Ted is keeping it down because maybe he's still holding out for Michael. You know, as we remember the shirtless photo that he keeps in his office drawer, that maybe the reason why he has rebuffed so many people and has held such a quote unquote impossible standard is because he's holding out that maybe Michael will notice him.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting because it's like the second tier, Brian and Michael. And so like,
right.
Mm-hmm. You know, the same sort of dynamic is playing out between Michael and Ted, yet it's much more hidden and it's much more under the surface for what we know right now. Right.
So they're at Woody's and, Michael sees that Debbie is there with his uncle Vic.
Why do you have to come here?
Vic was feeling better, so we thought we'd come after my shift and have a drink. What's the big deal?
The big deal is I came here to hang out with my friends, not my mother.
Sweetie, you know I approve of your lifestyle.
Maybe I don't want you to approve. Maybe I want you to go home and cry.
Yeah, and Michael flips the fuck out, and that made no sense to me because just last episode, there was that lovely walk home with Michael and his mom, and then... You know, yeah, Michael's jacking off in his room in front of his mom.
And he, you know, he snaps at her and saying, like, what if I don't want you to approve of me? I just want you to go home and cry. I'm like,
where's that coming from?
So you're lacking you actually don't want the approval of your mother?
Because there's no motivation for that in the Michael character.
I think that was just Michael being petty about having to deal with Justin and Justin appearing again, because he tells Brian straight away that I'm not dealing with him anymore. He's your problem. And Brian is like half listening because he's distracted by another shiny shirt at the bar, and shiny shirt disappears. So now, much like how Justin was stalking Brian is now stalking shiny shirt. So they follow shiny shirt to Babylon.
This is Justin's first time at Babylon, right?
Yes, this is, because Justin asks Debbie, you know, like, do you remember me? And she's like, yes. And she asks him to turn around to check out his ass. And I'm like, this is where I identify with Debbie, because that's exactly how I recognize people too. I ask them to turn around so I could check out their ass.
Turn around, lift up your shiny shirt.
Thank you.
And take a look at your saggy jeans from 2000.
Oh. But he still filled them out, so good for him.
Yeah.
And, you know, he said, I'm actually looking for a friend of Michael's, Brian. And Debbie and Vic are both like, of course you are. And it's like, okay. When even Uncle Vic understands Brian's reputation, maybe you should rethink your choices.
Yeah.
So they said, well, it's 11 o'clock, going to Babylon. The night is young. And Vic being... you know, the supportive older generation gay that he is, offers Justin his ID.
It was interesting because it was posed as like a membership card, which is a very UK thing, where after hours clubs are members only. So you really do need to have a membership to get in. And here it was just this kind of awkward line where it would have been better if it was, if it actually gave Justin his driver license or something like that.
So I thought they were just messing with him, and I thought that Vic did give him his driver's license. Is that what he gave him?
Yeah, it was a membership card, and this was the only time in the show where we hear that Babylon is a members-only club, kind of like, say, Steamworks in Chicago. But You never hear it again. Afterwards, it just turns into a normal bar.
Justin could get the student rate at Steamworks. He's, you know, being in high school, you should get in. I'm sure Babylon has something like that. Maybe they have like a junior membership.
Yeah, yeah.
And so Justin heads off to Babylon to, again.
Daphne
so,
and Toe.
So remember, we have Shiny Shirt has left. So Brian is pursuing Shiny Shirt. And then that means that Justin is now pursuing Brian. And then, of course, our boys have all ended up at Babylon. Brian and Michael go into the bathroom while Justin and Daphne have entered. And
Daphne loves it. Daphne walked in.
Daphne
and she's
is
like,
living.
She's at Disneyland.
She is in fruit fly heaven. Yeah. She's like, why would you want to leave? And like a lot. I mean, and I think there's something about when they enter that I think they may have amped up the feel of the club.
Yeah.
Because, you know, again, it's somewhat reminiscent of when the show first started, mm-hmm. Where, you know, the music is bumping. There's like all sorts of shirtless hunky men dancing on each other.
Yeah, I think at
the
time you called it like an overstimulating scene.
Yeah.
Where they just turn everything way up.
And Justin
wanted to leave.
Like, that works for, the motivation for Justin.
But why did he want to leave, though? He's scared. He walks in, Daphne's like, whoa! And Justin's like, Daph, do you want to leave?
Yeah, it's like...
That didn't make any sense.
Yeah, I don't know if that's just like, did we finally hit a limit where Justin didn't feel comfortable or what? I mean, maybe there is a point where it is too much. I don't know. Maybe that is a plot point that doesn't quite track.
I can see where in several times we see Justin's confidence going up and he's punching out of his weight class quite a bit. In many cases, and maybe this is one like overstimulated thing where he realized, whoa, and it kind of just knocked him back into his place as a baby gay that really doesn't know what he's doing, mm-hmm. and is walking into this mecca that the show turns Babylon into a mecca of like decadent gay lifestyle.
Yes.
And it really does become a symbol for all of that. And that, I guess in that context, Justin would be scared. Daphne's curious. Justin's a little terrified by it.
But so we're left hanging because Brian and Michael go into, you know, the bathroom and they're trying to find an empty stall. And the way the shot was done is, you know, it's overhead. So we're able to check into the other stalls where everyone is, of course, all hooking up in the bathroom stalls.
That bathroom was disgusting. It was almost like the Trainspotting bathroom.
I'm almost positive the Trainspotting bathroom may have been cleaner. And so they go in, they finally get into it. And I love what Michael says, like, what if you actually had to go?
Yeah.
When they go into, they finally get into an empty stall and the sign on it says, no sex in the bathrooms. That's what the couches are for. And then that makes you really question the couches. Because
this bar has got it all. They've got people banging in the bathrooms, doing drugs in the bathrooms. They've got the back room. They have curtains made out of chain. They've scared away Justin.
Yes, they've got it all. And so they take Brian and Michael share some sort of hit of something. At first I thought it was poppers, but like they're like...
Yeah, they were snorting something.
Oh, yeah.
What did they call it? Trail mix?
Trail mix, which...
Wait, before you tell me, because I'm sure that you looked up what this would be.
I went to WebMD.
By their reactions, it looked like it must have been heroin. Because that didn't look like an upper of any kind. They take a big snort off of it, and then they're like, oh. And
they're like,
that's not meth, that's not coke, and
they're forehead to forehead, like they're holding on to each other.
I guess you can snort opioids, so that's where I netted out as like that's got to be like in the heroin family.
Okay, so you think it's kind of like a heroin?
I think it's an opioid.
Okay, are you ready?
Yeah,
from WebMD. It's called Trail Mix. This is actually an article. This I'm just going to read some of the article.
July 20th.
This is from July 20th, 2001, Washington. It's called Trail Mix, and it's a far cry from the healthy blend of fruits and nuts you take on a hike, say the experts. Mm. Fruits and nuts. I mean, one and the same here, right? Instead, it's the latest party drug craze consisting of ecstasy, known to cause an intense high, and Viagra, which is used to improve sexual prowess.
How did we not know about this?
For now, the primary users are gay men in New York City and Boston, where trail mix is showing up at dance parties and clubs.
What is the date on that article?
July 20th, 2001. When did this episode? December 10th, 2000. So this was very in the know of gay culture here.
That's a little shocking for like something that specific to pop up in a script from these two writers at this point. It's a little too like accurate, whereas a lot of stuff was almost like archetypes of a whole bunch of different things.
But it explains the behavior that happens between Brian and Michael.
So what was it? MDMA and Viagra?
So they each take a pretty strong whiff of this trail mix, and they're holding on to each other. They're forehead to forehead.
Michael goes in for a grab.
Well, first Michael is kind of talking about how he spent a week's worth of pay on a mint condition, I think, Wonder Woman doll.
Did I tell you what I got on eBay? A vintage Mega Linda Carter Wonder Woman doll, mint in box.
And Brian immediately calls him pathetic. But yeah, then it's like the moment is just so intense and the tension is just so ripe.
Is this drug still like mixed by local disco pharmacologists?
I have no idea.
Where did this go?
I'm going to leave this recording and you're about to make a call, aren't you, Patrick?
We have an explicit rating on this podcast for a reason.
Episode 4, we may be on trail mix, guys. We'll see where that takes us.
Straight to Babylon.
Yes. And into that back room. And so Brian and Michael are in this really close embrace. The tension's really taut. And Michael just goes for it. And they start to make out just a little. And then Michael just tries to get himself a good old handful of Brian D. And then Brian pulls away and says, "What are you doing?" And Michael just, "No. Oh, it must be the trail mix." Yes, that's what it is.
That all makes sense now.
Right?
God, we sound like prudes here. We don't know what trail mix is.
The more you know.
Leave a like in the comments if you know what trail mix is.
And where you can get some. Yeah. And
just kidding. Just hypothetically.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
And so they have that like weird little moment and they leave the bathroom.
And then boom, they're all of a sudden 100% back to normal sober.
Yeah, I guess the effects of trail mix are very brief. And Ted is, of course, at the bar trying to hit on any six-pack that he can. And it's so terrible. And, you know, like he's trying to, like, "Hi, how are you? Hi, how are you?" Nothing. He's getting absolutely nothing.
"Hey, how you doing?"
"Good. Glad to hear it."
"Hey, how's it going?" "No complaints, thanks. Hey, can I buy you a drink?"
I love that part.
Oh, it's so rough because no one is saying anything to
him. You know, I loved it, but it was also like a little overdone because in a lot of cases, it's not hard to get somebody to talk to you at a gay bar, especially one where everybody is on trail mix or is drinking. It's just not that hard. And they just really made a meal out of Ted being completely unapproachable. Nobody wants to talk to him, let alone like bang him. And all of a sudden here comes our hero.
Then
your hero.
Oh, Blake.
Yeah.
Bless you. So Blake shows up.
Without the trail mix, he had something better.
Oh yeah. And so basically, again, Blake tries to make it happen. It doesn't. And Ted's leaving the club. And they run into it. And Blake, like, chases after him.
Yeah.
And, you know, he says...
Yeah, it's back to that stalker thing that we talked about in episode 1, where it's, like, chasing people.
But Blake is so much cuter than the butt guy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so I'm a little more lenient on it. And Blake is honestly trying, like, anything he can to like try and break through the Ted wall, you know, like, yeah, sometimes it can get a little intense in there. And Ted's just like, yeah. And it's like, "Oh, so you're heading home?" Yeah. Yeah. It's like, Would you like some company? And Ted's just like, yeah, it's getting late. And yeah. And he goes for it. And I'm so in the Ted corner with it. It makes me so
team
happy.
Ted.
Oh, I'm so team Ted. And they go for it. And so he brings Blake home to his apartment and
his condo. It's like, do you own this?
And he's like, yes. And yeah, he's very, you know, he's very proud of the,
he's very dad like, he's very like out of,
he's the original dad bod. and he's stable, you know, he has a job. It may be boring, but it pays the bills. He has a nice little condo. He's got it together.
Scott Wall delivers the goods in this entire episode. He was so good as Ted Schmidt. Mm-hmm. Loved it.
We find out that Blake does not drink. So he asks for some water.
Surprise.
And Ted gets a beer and they're sitting and they actually have, like, they have such a tender, like, it's, it continued to, like, I was just so excited and happy for Ted that Ted opened himself up to, like, the remote possibility that someone could be interested in him. And,
a nice water drinking boy.
Yes. And, you know, Blake just puts his hand, or he puts his hand on Ted's knee and, and it's just like, you're beautiful because you don't know that you're so cute.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh.
And then your hero, Blake, wants to make things better. So.
Yeah. So they're making out. We're understanding where this is going. Blake has got his shirt off, which, you know, 10 for that. And there, and he said, hold on, that, and Blake, you know, holds the moment. And I love that Tess is like, you're not leaving, are you? And he's like, no way.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, this is wonderful.
Let me get something out of my pocket
right
for
here. I'm thinking maybe it's a condom, because again, safe sex, good for them.
Yeah.
And no, he pulls out this little vial of clear liquid and pours it into the water, and it turns out it's with GHB.
Yeah.
And Ted apparently has done this a couple of times.
Blake has.
No, Ted mentions it too. Ted said that he's done it. He asked Ted if he's ever done it, and Ted says a couple of times.
Do you think Ted was telling the truth there?
Oh, no. Not at all. And this is why I say no, and I think he was just putting up a
because
fight.
He downed the whole glass?
He was like gulping the thing, and it was not a tall glass. But also, I need to call out Ted for being really dumb, for downing some sort of liquid that was put in by a stranger. So here I then started writing all the scenarios. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Blake is drugging Ted. He's going to assault him in some way. He's going to rob him. He's going to do something. And
I think he technically did assault him.
That's true.
But you still love Blake. That's fine.
Team Blake. I think I can forget.
Wait, you're
Blake.
In both corners. You're team Blake and team Ted for this scene.
I'm in the corner for Ted and Blake to happen.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's easy to root for Ted, and you like the notion that Blake is giving something to Ted that you kind of wanted Ted to get for the first two episodes of this show. And here it starts to happening. So there's good anticipation. There's good intention going on. And here comes the obstructions.
Right. And so the scene is basically cutting back to Babylon, where, and let's bring it back to Katsu.
Happened to him?
Emmett is trying to find Katsu in the club, and he thinks that Katsu is like this poor little foreigner who, you know, like, what if some old cock queen tries to get at him and someone lays a great dig at him and is like, I thought you did. And I was a big fan of that line. And then poor Emmett, catches Katsu at the bar with an older gentleman who's all over
and
him.
And that guy was the only guy in Babylon wearing a suit.
He was wearing a suit. I mean, it was a better suit than what Michael wore to the Bris, but
to the steam room. Technically.
Yeah, so it was a total, you know, silver fox just all over Katsu, and Emmett's like, "What is going on?" And like full Blanche DuBois, how dare he, sir? And Katsu pulls out the money, and
Kane,
and makes his point known. That's why he's letting this older guy just mack all over him.
Yeah. I really like the way they tied that together.
I was really happy. Yeah, that was something that I thought was really great about this whole episode.
It's moving so fast too.
Yeah, there's not as much that they have to try and tie all together in this one. So the fact they were able to pull something from the beginning that we were laughing at to, you know, the truth finally comes to Emmett and that Michael fibbed I still don't understand why Emmett thought that was going to work when they really had such a language barrier. Bless Emmett's poor little heart.
That's why we love Emmett. Emmett is just as naive as Katsu is. And at the same time, though, Emmett always has these moments of like good gay streetwise senses to him. But it was a really nice play between the two characters where they are almost reversing roles, where Katsu becomes like kind of the street smart one and Emmett's kind of the lost little boy, really in love.
How do you say tacky little cocksucker in Japanese?
And then we cut back to Ted and Blake, see how they're doing.
Oh, yeah.
And they're you know, it's
delightful.
It's getting a little more intense. And then we see the GHB really take effect.
Yeah.
To where Ted has to stop making out with Blake, and then he can't seem to focus, and he's losing balance, and then we see him just drop to the floor. All the while, we're cutting from what's going on with Ted and Blake to Babylon, and we see that Brian has found Shiny Shirt on the dance floor. Justin has seen this from afar.
Yeah.
And Brian and Shiny Shirt are just like living it, dancing their life. Also, Michael and Emmett are viewing this as well from the rafters.
Yeah.
And I guess Brian was just like put on overdrive because not only is he dancing
Trail Shiny, Mix.
Trail Mix. That's right. The Trail Mix. So he is fueled. So we have Brian dancing with Shiny Shirt. Then he and Shiny Shirt catch a guy, this other like sort of beefcake with bad facial hair.
He looked like the porn star Matthew Rush. Was that him?
I don't think so.
Probably I was 17 just, years ago. No, it couldn't have been him.
No. And I was also still just distracted by the terrible facial hair. But they're like, I don't know if Brian was just like, I am in testosterone. Like, I've got to drop a lot of protein now. So they invite this third guy to all dance together, and you know, Michael and Emmett are like, no way, he's gonna make it happen. He has
I love that play by play that they're doing so great. From the rafters.
It's like you.
What does he say to them?
Like you're expecting like a playback screen, and so that Michael and Emmett could then like jot down and give us the play by play. It's great.
Yeah.
Justin sees this and decides to one up the whole thing, and this is where I'm like, Justin 17, really finally acknowledging that he is attractive and starting to live in his sexuality.
Whips off his shirt. Confetti falls out of the ceiling.
To this amazing remix of Let's Hear It for the Boy.
Yeah, and unfortunately, if you were watching this on Netflix, you don't even hear that song. You hear something entirely different.
And that is so sad for you because it is an amazing sequence. That to hear and like to see Justin just like living in like knowing that he's gonna go down there and he's gonna try and steal the attention away.
Yeah, and then we find out that Justin's really a terrible dancer.
Oh, awful! I mean, he's dancing like every other tiny little twink boy at Scarlet, and
a nice club in Chicago for those out of the city here.
Yes, and they're. Justin is like getting in like by the group, and then he just by being Justin, young and sweet and only 17, manages to get Shiny Shirt and bad facial hair to join him.
Yeah, that was just like magnetic.
He's just
standing there as like the clearly underage twink at the bar, and people just immediately gravitate around him, which is both creepy and expected. And there's Brian kind of like, ooh, competition. I'm up for competition.
And Brian is like, I'm not having it. And so like, while there's like this Justin sandwich happening, Brian literally puts his arms out
yeah.
and parts the waters. a shiny shirt and bad facial hair so he can have Justin all to himself.
Let's hear it for the trail mix.
Oh, man. Meanwhile, all this is going on, and we're cutting back to Ted and Blake, and Blake is freaking out because Ted is having some sort of reaction.
Yeah, to be clear, Ted's on the floor twitching around,
like it is
foaming
it,
at the mouth.
It's a seizure. It is something, and Blake just doesn't know what is going on. And
I've never seen anybody G out that bad.
And Blake, like, I thought maybe Blake will call 911 or maybe he'll hold out. No, Blake grabs the vial and runs out in panic and leaves Ted. And this is such smart editing, too, because we have this triumph for Justin and Brian to let's hear for the boy with the confetti. I mean, it is like it is like gay turned to 11.
Well, and as Ted is reaching the zenith of his G out, he starts crawling across the floor towards a picture of Michael and Emmett and Ted all at Babylon. And it's so subtle. You really have to look for it. I had to rewind a couple times and watch it. But he's just reaching out for his friends. And you kind of realize that he's still somewhat with it, but he knows that he's going into a dark place. Mm-hmm. And he's just reaching for his friends. It was really touching. And it wasn't overdone the way that a lot of other things in the show are. And it was just one of those really, really subtle things from, once again, director Russell Mulcahy.
And the final moment of this episode, you know, we see that Justin has won Brian over again, and Daphne's proud of Justin for getting his man back.
Yeah.
And then we see the camera move up towards Michael, and Emmett's off just a little off the center of the frame.
That dance that Emmett was doing.
And Emmett
so
is
good.
Just like living his best life and dancing. And I like that part cracked me up.
Dances right out of the shot.
And it's so great as the camera moves up. And I want to know if on the screens that were behind Michael, if that was something that was just superimposed, or if that's what like the cameras at Babylon were capturing, because they capture quite conveniently Brian and Justin looking at the camera that would really be looking like they're looking at Michael.
I don't think Babylon really has cameramen running around. I think that was more just a demonstration or more demonstrative of Brian and Justin taking a much bigger role over Michael. And that's why they were behind. Mm-hmm. That was shot from that angle where it's happening behind Michael, and Michael is just getting smaller and smaller as the camera is zooming in on Brian and Justin. They're getting bigger and bigger. And it was a little kitschy, but it worked. And it showed that this was the moment where Michael kind of realized that he's got new competition for Brian's attention, and he's losing. He's losing out on Brian. Brian's like kind of pulling away a little further.
And Justin may have won Brian over.
Yeah, let's hear it for the boy.
Let's hear it for the boy.
That's where this episode ends. It fades out. Bar scene's over. Ted's unconscious on the ground.
So we have a cliffhanger on our hands.
We do. And the funny thing about this episode is that it was so comedic up to maybe the last 5 minutes. It had elements of humor in it. It had us empathizing with the characters in funny ways that we haven't seen so far. And then, bam, it goes totally dark with Ted.
Yeah, and that's, you know, and I think that that's a key to the, that speaks to how the show hooks you.
Yeah.
You know, we finally have a track for Ted to maybe finally be a winner, only to see him be put out again.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time this episode ends, we don't know his fate.
It was a great episode. So what's your verdict on it, Matt?
I was a big fan of this episode, even with the casual racism. You know what? Let me retract that statement. Looking back on it, the way they handle the Katsu storyline, if I were to watch that in 2017, they would get lambasted pretty hard.
So a note to our listeners, when we're reviewing these episodes, we're watching the originals. I think that probably we should take a look at the Netflix version of this one and see what they did to Katsu. And see
I'm
if
kind
it's...
of curious, too.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think if you were to remove the problematic
racism.
The casual racism that they handle with Katsu. The episode is still funny. It moved at a quick pace. It gives us another shade of the Brian character in regard to how he handles the Gus's Briss. And we start to see an evolution in Justin very quickly.
Yeah.
I
think it was funny to watch, and it flew by. The last episode that we talked about, it kind of hurt to watch the whole thing because there's so much going on in it. In this one, like we called it a sitcom or a screwball comedy, it was easy watching, and it was easy to get through it. And I think it does hold up. I think 17 years later, the themes that we saw going on in the episode are still relevant. And even if we didn't know what trail mix is, it's been replaced by many other things.
And this is the end of No Briss, No Shirt, No Service.
Thanks for listening. Leave a like, share with a friend, and subscribe so you don't miss our next episode. Still, Queer as Folk was written and performed by Patrick Randall and Matt Dominguez. Made with love in Chicago.
Hey, Todd, how's it going?
Fine.